Hi there, listeners. Welcome to episode 75 of Never on the Backfoot podcast. On the podcast, joining me today is Arjun Hemadi. He is a Mumbai-based full-time finance professional with a deep love of writing and all things cricket. His first novel called You Raise Me Up is a romantic comedy about a chartered accountant. His latest book, Captain Khadus, is a cricket-based fiction novel with a background of mental health. Arjun loves reading, watching cricket, creating and spreading memes, and also does a bit of writing along the way. So let's hop on to understand more about him and his book. Hi Arjun, welcome to Never on the Backfoot podcast. Really happy to have you here.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Neha, and I appreciate the opportunity and to reach out to your listeners and your fans and everybody. So yeah, really thanks for the opportunity.
Thanks, Arjun. And before we get started with the topic, I'll just ask you a couple of questions, you know, to acquaint our listeners about you and your love for the game. So what got you first interested in the game? Like, you can talk a little bit about yourself as a cricket fan, and what are some of your early memories of the sport?
See, I was introduced to cricket by my late father, actually. You know, he wanted me to understand and follow cricket for the 1996 World Cup. I was around almost 7 years at that time, 7 years old at that time. So, he consciously started introducing me to the game about, like a little earlier to that. So that, you know, when the World Cup starts, and that time 96 World Cup was held partly in India also. So that excitement was there in him, and he was a really, really big cricket fan. And a lot of the cricketing knowledge that I've got has come from my conversations with him. So those were the first memories that I have of watching cricket are definitely 96 World Cup. The first match that I remember watching was India versus Sri Lanka, the group stage match.
Okay.
You know, there was one match where India scored, it was in Delhi, New Delhi. And India scored, I think, 270 odd, which in those days was very good. And Sachin scored a century, 137, I think. And I was very happy. I mean, I understood enough cricket at that time to realize that, 270 odd is a very good score. But then Sanath Jayasurya came out and, he hit 89 or 80 something in 40 balls or something. And then I knew that the match is gone from our hands. So that was probably my first memory, a little sad memory, but that was one of the first memories that I had. Yeah. And then also, I watched that whole World Cup. I remember, rather clearly, I remember watching Vinod Kambli cry also going off the field. That was a little sad moment. So, unfortunately, my first introduction to cricket also was a little bit of a sad kind of thing, So that's the first few memories, yeah.
Okay. And how is it like, playing cricket in a childhood? Have you played cricket in school? And what are some of your fondest memories?
See, I was very bad at cricket. I was very bad at gully cricket also. So I was a very bad fielder, actually. I was very afraid of the ball, even a rubber ball. I never really progressed in the game. But I was a very good, I'm saying it with a lot of pride, but I'm not sure if I should, but I was a very big and very good daydreamer.
Okay.
I would think a lot. I would imagine situations. I would have a bat at home. And I would imagine that, such a bowler is coming and bowling to me, how I'm going to play it. And I would, could have those kitchen mitts, I mean those gloves which would have to hold hot things.
Yeah.
So that our hands don't get hurt. So I would wear them and imagine them to be gloves.
Oh.
And I would, of course, shadow batting or whatever. But I was always fascinated with cricket equipment, even though I knew that I was not good at the game at all. I actually went for cricket coaching, but I didn't do very well. And there was one match in which I got selected in the, I was in a boys' school. I went to St. Mary's ICC school in Mumbai. And there was one match, you know, and I wanted to play. I thought that I was good at bowling, I think I was not that good.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought that I was good at bowling. So what happened was, one player was got injured or something.
Okay.
And I was selected at number 11, the last guy. Okay. I mm-hmm. looked at bowling. I could not stop a ball which came to me while fielding also. And I came in last for batting. I came at number 11. And I just swung the bat hard and I got run out. Because those pads, you know, you can't, it's difficult to run with pads.
Yes, right? Yes, yeah.
I was the person that was running with pads.
Hmm.
So I fell down a couple of times and I got run out. And I was actually pretty happy because and we lost the match. So,
oh no, okay.
So that was kind of, it was really scary actually, you know, seeing that hard cricket ball being thrown at you, you know. It's still very scary thing for me to relive, you know, like relive and all that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Those are my earliest memories of playing the game.
Okay, and who are some of your favorite cricketers? This can be male or female growing up, and who is it currently?
See, growing up, without a doubt, it was Sachin Tendulkar.
Hmm.
I was such a big Sachin fan that I didn't notice any other cricketer other than Sachin.
Hmm.
Now, whether it was an Indian cricketer, I would not also look at them also. So forget looking at a like a non-Indian cricketer. That was out of the question.
Hmm.
So Sachin was, yeah, I mean, see, Sachin, you know, people say, you know, people have that debate of Sachin versus Virat and everything.
Yeah.
My view in this, see, I've seen both of them play. Of course, I've watched cricket since 96.
Hmm.
That was, you know, 7 years after, Sachin debuted. Sachin was already playing for 7 years when I started watching.
Hmm.
But the thing is that when Sachin played, there was a kind of emotion that one felt, you know, which I felt that he was a very emotional player, even though he did not show it that much.
Hmm.
But Virat Kohli, I think this is going to sound very controversial, but Virat Kohli, I believe is much more a complete batsman than Sachin.
Okay.
But I find Virat to be a little on the side of being mechanical, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I think Sachin was, I think that emotionality in Sachin's game really came out, and that got all of us, you know. I mean, I don't know if you heard this, but when Sachin gets out, we'd switch off the television.
I've heard that. Yeah. Hmm.
I've done that myself.
Okay.
Multiple times. That was the kind of effect that Sachin had. And just to give a bit of context, see, Sachin played he was the sole guy who held up our batting, you know, till Saurav Ganguly, U.S. Lakshman, and Rahul Dravid became established players, and Virender Sehwag became established players. He was one guy who I believe solely held up our batting lineup for a decade almost.
Yeah.
You know, and without being too political or whatever, I think the 90s were not that happy a time for us as a country.
Mm-hmm.
And the only happiness that we found was in cricket.
Yeah.
Our cricket team was struggling quite a bit, you know. I remember matches seeing Rahul Dravid bowling 10 overs in multiple matches. And proper off spin. I mean, that was because, you know, our players weren't there that much.
Mm-hmm.
So, that was something. And, you know, now when I see two Indian sides playing, one in England, and this, you know, like this recently happened.
Yeah.
One in England and one in Sri Lanka.
Yeah.
And both sides are winning.
Hmm.
You know, somebody like me who's watched those days, I really can't believe it. It's such amazing days.
Hmm.
So those are some things, you know, which I mean, this current depth of the squad that we have is really, I mean, it's, I could not imagine this growing up. And we would daydream, you know.
Yeah.
That we'd have two sides playing on, you know, like playing on the same day.
Hmm.
But nobody in a right mind could probably imagine that could really happen.
Yeah. I mean, any other like cricketer who you currently follow and really like their style, their technique?
As I matured, I won't say grew up, as I matured,
Okay.
I started appreciating other players also,
hmm.
other than Sachin. Now, one player who currently is my favorite player, but he's not playing anymore, is Anil Kumble. Anil Kumble okay. is my hmm. Anil Kumble is my personal favorite player.
Okay.
And because, see, he was somebody who was the unsung hero of Indian cricket.
Absolutely,
he,
yeah.
He won India so many matches.
Hmm.
And, you know, it's he's somebody with for whom I have, you know, so much respect for.
Hmm.
And I really, really admire him. And that's, you know, real genuine admiration.
Hmm.
And there are also a few other cricketers like Shivanarayan Chandrapal of West Indies.
Yeah.
I think one thing which I really like about him is that he didn't, you know, change the way that he played. He was a very unorthodox player.
Mm-hmm.
And some people found it difficult for him to watch, but I really enjoyed him.
Yeah.
I really, really enjoyed watching him. There was something so homespun about his batting style, you know, which, see, I mean, to be very frank, when Sachin bats, people may think, yeah, you know, like I may not be able to do that.
Hmm.
Because what Sachin did was kind of borderline superhuman, if I may say that.
Magical, yeah. But,
yeah, yeah, actually, yeah. The shots that he played are some things which, I mean, many people probably would struggle with. I know I personally would struggle to play the shots that Sachin played.
Yeah.
His awareness and everything. Now, that's not saying that Chandrapal did not have awareness. But, you know, he knew what his game was. And he played around that and still he mm-hmm. scored so many runs. Similarly yeah. with Anil Kumble. He was mm-hmm. somebody who famously did not spin the ball that much. But still, that did not stop him from getting 600 odd wickets.
Yeah.
And one more thing about Anil Kumble was that he was our captain from 2007 to 2008.
Yes, yes. Hmm.
That is a period which not many people remember. I mean, when people ask me who is my favorite captain, he ranks in the top three.
Okay. Hmm.
And people look at me and laugh sometimes. They're like, you know, Anil Kumble was captain only for 1 year. I mean, of all people, why do you select him?
But, yeah.
But I mean that 2007-8... Border Gavaskar Trophy in Australia
mm-hmm.
was so intense and so hostile.
Mm.
I mean, I don't think I've seen a more hostile series than that.
Yeah.
And anybody else would have been captain. I mean, due respect to them, anybody else could have been captain. They would not have managed that situation as well as Anil Kumble did.
True, yeah.
And I feel really sad. See, I think this is not only... this is my personal belief based on what I've seen and what I've read.
Mm-hmm.
That batsmen are given more respect in our country than bowlers.
Absolutely, yeah.
When somebody is being selected as a captain,
mm-hmm.
automatically it's not the best player, it's the best batsman as a captain.
Yeah.
Now just think about it. I mean, 2000, the year 2000, when Mohammad Azharuddin was the captain, 2000 was a very tumultuous and forgettable year, I think, for
mm-hmm.
all Indian cricket fans, because that was the year when, you know, that match fixing scandal came out.
Yeah.
And the captain of our team, Azharuddin, was supposedly involved in that.
Mm.
So, when he was sacked as captain, he was a very long-standing captain, obviously.
Yeah.
So when he was sacked as captain, who did people turn to? They should have turned to, in my opinion, they should have probably turned to the senior most cricketer in the side, other than Sachin. Because
mm-hmm.
Sachin had been a captain and he did not, to be frank, he did not do that well. And
yeah.
he also said that he's not that interested
mm-hmm.
to do it anymore. So, other than Sachin, the senior most person in the team was Anil Kumble.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was a good time for him to be made as a captain. But for whatever reasons, maybe he was a bowler. Maybe he was not asked. Maybe he said no. I don't know what the real reason is.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, he was not given the captaincy.
Yeah.
And that's something, you know, when I saw Anil Kumble's captaincy in those brief 2 years when he was captain,
mm-hmm.
it made me feel a sense that, you know, what could have been if mm-hmm. he would have been captain since the year 2000. Now, Gautam Gambhir has gone on record and said that. In some of his interviews, Gautam Gambhir, that
right,
you know,
yeah.
Anil Kumble was somebody who, if he had been captain for a long time, he would have been really amazing.
Hmm.
Now, Gautam Gambhir is not somebody who's going to just praise anybody and everybody. Out of the blue, yeah. He is somebody who is very, there's this Hindi word called, I won't use that Hindi word, sorry. No, he's very
like upfront,
if I may say.
Okay.
Thrifty with this, you know, he does not praise people very easily. Now, when he is full of praise for somebody like Anil Kumble, that to me definitely shows what kind of, you know, person Anil Kumble was as a player also. Yeah.
Very true. That really well. And yeah, go on. You had something to add.
No, I think him, Anil Kumble definitely was at that time. And now I'm going to take a name which probably not many people would say, but okay. Ajinkya Rahane is one of my favorite players as of now.
Yeah.
I think the way that he led India in the, again, the Australia tour, where we had basically a third string side.
Yeah.
And we won it. I think a lot of it went down to his leadership.
Absolutely.
A lot of it went down to his leadership. So that is something which, you know, some people may say that, you know, I'm from Mumbai, so I'm going to say that Ajinkya Rahane is, some people may say that, but to me, it doesn't matter which city or state the captain of India comes from.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter to me. If he does a good job, he should stay on as captain. So that Border Gavaskar trophy was something which, it was a full strength Australian team. Australia had no excuses this time. Last time in 2018, when we won in Australia, it was like, you know, they said that Steve Smith is not there, Warner is not there.
Warner,
So that reason, you know, like that was the reason that they had. But you know, this time around, they had no excuses at all. And we beat their best side.
Yeah.
Convincingly. Pretty convincingly.
Yeah.
And that was, I mean, again, I remember watching that match live. And it was, I could not believe what was happening. Such a young side showing such confidence.
Yeah.
Hostile conditions in a very tough and mentally demanding tour. Where there are a lot of untoward incidents with the Indian team with regard to their quarantine and everything, hotels,
yeah,
stay and everything. I think they showed immense composure and calmness and grit and determination.
Yeah.
You know, people say that aggression, you know, aggression is one word which is used very loosely. Aggression to me does not mean shouting, screaming, abusing. I think aggression means something which comes from one's actions and one's intentions.
Yeah.
Now that, to me, Ajinkya Rahane is the most aggressive player, most aggressive captain that India has had. And now, I'm with no disrespect to all the other captains that we had, but there is something special and different that I see about Ajinkya Rahane. And, you know, I really hope that he continues to be there in the side, because his presence, especially for the young players, is very, very important. See, because Ajinkya Rahane is somebody who has spent time on the sidelines.
As well, yeah.
He had to spend many, many years. I don't remember how many, maybe 2 or 3 years on the sidelines, you know, before he could get a chance to play. I mean, that's a very difficult thing to do mentally.
Yeah.
Very frustrating. And he has been there. So he probably would be somebody who would guide other youngsters who have been on the fringes for a long time and not getting a chance. So these are some of the players who I admire as of now. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. And considering you have been watching cricket from the 90s, right? So what would be some of your favorite cricket matches? You know, you can have many, or you can just have the match, you know, which you really like. You can rewatch anything.
See, one match definitely was the 2011 Cricket World Cup final.
Okay.
That we won. See, we won that match, and to be very honest, MS Dhoni made it look very easy. Because, you know, MS Dhoni at that time was in the, you know, like at the peak of his powers. What he would do was, he would take probably 3 or 4 singles of the first five balls and hit a 4. So without knowing it, you would have 6, you know, like 7-8 runs already. And without huffing and puffing, you made 7-8 runs.
Yeah.
That is something, that was the genius of MS Dhoni in those days when he was a master chaser. That is definitely, the 2011 World Cup is one of my favorite. Then obviously that series in Australia, 2020-21, which we won. And also one match which I remember pretty well was 2003 World Cup match with Pakistan. So Pakistan had a very strong bowling lineup. They had a very, very strong team.
Okay.
And they scored 270 odd. Now, 270 again in those days was a big task. It was not easy to, it was not a walk in the park. Like, you know, like it is supposedly right now. And the bowling attack was Wasim Akram, Shoaib Akhtar, Waqar Yunus, Saqlain Mushtaq, and Azhar Mahmood also was there, who was a pretty decent bowler himself. Abdul Razak was also there. So there was nobody, no bowler we could say that is an easy bowler as such. And the way that Sachin and Sehwag tore them apart, it was you had to see it to believe it. You had to see it live. Some things, you know, which are seen afterwards may not have the same effect. But when one saw it live, it was, that was an Indian side which was absolutely combative. You know, we didn't give Pakistan a chance on that day, and that was an amazing match which I'll always remember.
Okay. And, you know, like you did talk about your favorite matches and everything. So have you actually been to a stadium to watch a match? And what is that experience like?
Yeah, I have been to a couple of IPL matches. I have seen Sachin play live in 2010. And that was really special for me. That was because also, you know, Sachin in that year in 2010 was injured pretty often. And there was not much guarantee whether he would be, you know, playing that match or not. So when, you know, my father got me the tickets for that match, and I went and saw the match, and Sachin played. And the atmosphere in the stadium was electric.
Okay.
See, Sachin, if Sachin scored a single, the noise that, the noise that the crowd made,
the road,
more than, the noise that the crowd made was more than another batsman hitting a six, batter hitting a six.
Yeah.
That was the impact, that was the love which people had for Sachin. That was one thing. And second match, which again my father had taken me to, was late 90s, probably 97-98.
Okay.
Now, before, now, I mean, nowadays it's a common thing to see that domestic matches like Ranji Trophy, and, you know, they're not watched that much. Like in the stadium itself.
Yeah.
People don't really go and watch it.
Mm-hmm.
In the, you know, like in the stadium. But in those days, it was really watched.
Okay.
And even my dad had taken me to a List A game. It was a domestic, you know, domestic match, 50-over match. And this was in either Wankhede or Brabourne Stadium. Either of those two. In like one of those two. And Robin Singh was bowling. Robin Singh, if you remember, was a all-rounder who played for India.
Yeah.
Left-handed batsman and medium pacer and very amazing fielder of his time.
Mm-hmm.
So Robin Singh was bowling, and the entire crowd in Mumbai. See, Mumbai has a very passionate crowd, and it's a very vocal crowd also. So that is something which sets apart the Mumbai crowd.
Yeah.
So they were shouting in Marathi. I can translate it for you, but I'll say what they were saying in Marathi. They said, "Robin, tujhe aai bolavte aahe." It means that Robin, your mother is calling you.
Oh.
And I was just sitting in the audience and looking at my dad and saying, this guy's playing for India and they're heckling him.
Yeah, exactly.
But I mean, it was probably how invested they got in the game. A Mumbai crowd has always been a very vocal crowd. And I mean, people say Eden Gardens. Again, I'm going to say something controversial here, but I think the passion that comes out in a Mumbai stadium in Wankhede is, I've been there. So It's really, really something different. I'm not saying that it's better than Eden Gardens or elsewhere, because I have not been to Eden Gardens. But, you know, it definitely is something which sets Mumbai apart. That is one clear memory that I have in my mind. Robin Singh being heckled by, you know, his fellow Indian supporters.
Okay. And I mean, you have written a cricket book that we will get to a little later on in this episode. But what are some of your, you know, favorite cricket books of all time?
Actually, there are not so many. One cricket book which really left an impact on me was a book done by Disney on Rahul Dravid.
Okay.
A compilation of articles on Rahul Dravid. You know, some of his most toughest innings. See, Rahul Dravid was somebody who was not a very flamboyant cricketer. but he had a lot of substance. And he would play the tough innings very well. On a bad wicket, he would get stuck in and he would, you know, not give his wicket away. And that was something about Rahul Dravid. It is 81 and 68 in the 2006 series versus West Indies at Jamaica. Those are supposed to be one of the masterpieces on, you know, playing on a bad wicket, like I said. So they have described that innings. And also how they described is 180, which is, you know, people remember, you know, 180 versus Australia in Kolkata in 2001, that famous turnaround that we had versus Australia. So, I mean, VVS Laxman stole the day, I guess, on that day. But giving him amazing accompanying support was Rahul Dravid.
Absolutely, you know,
one should not forget, I mean, VVS Laxman was a very stylish batsman. And he, contrary to, you know, like contrary to popular belief, I thought that he was a pretty fast player. He kept his scoreboard ticking very well. And, you know, he would play those shots and keep the scoreboard ticking while Rahul Dravid would hold on one end and just ensure that, you know, we don't lose a wicket in the day. And that was the first time when I saw Australians get really frustrated. Australians in those days, even now, they were a very, very tough side. I mean, there was not a single player who could be said that he does not, you know, like he's an easy guy to, you know, we can easily run over. So that when I look at the current Australian side, it is nothing in comparison to what it was in 2001. That was an absolute powerhouse of a side, and teams would concede defeat even before the toss was being, you know, like even before the toss was done. That was the kind of psychological impact that they had on the opponent.
Okay. And I think this is kind of a philosophical question, but when you look back and, you know, I mean, in retrospect or even now, actually, what do you think is the positive impact that, you know, the sport has had on your life?
On my life? Tough question. I don't know how to answer that, but it has really inspired me in certain times. I think, you know, when we get to the book, I'll say a bit of, you know, like about, you know, like a bit about my struggles in a way. Sport, especially cricket, it has shown me that, you know, in the most darkest of times, there is a chance of winning. One example was a 2001 match in Kolkata versus Australia. Which we had, which we were as good as, you know, we had lost the match. But how we came back and we won that match again. I think that shows comebacks, and comebacks happen in life, and sport shows that. See, we are all going to fall down at some particular point in time. Falling down is not bad. Failing is not bad in my view. Even though it is very much, I believe it's very much demonized in our country, looked down upon in our country. Failure is looked down upon. I find no shame in failing. I've failed more times than I can count. And there's nothing, I've got no problems with that. And what sport shows us that one can be defeated one day, but come on the, you know, get up on the next day and fight again and, you know, emerge victorious or give up a good fight. I think that is something which I learned from sport.
Yeah, I think you did answer that well. And with that, we do, you know, conclude the first part of this interview that's, you know, about you and everything. This episode is all about Arjun and his book, Captain Khaduz. It is a fiction book set in 2025 and basically revolves around the journey of its protagonist, Suraj Bhatkal, a cricketer aiming to make a comeback to the Indian team. Arjun was kind enough to share the book with me, and having binge read it for an entire day, I can attest to the fact that it was such a brilliant read. The book encapsulates the protagonist's journey of becoming a cricketer, the trials and tribulations of being a cricketer, and the associated glitz, glamour, the ups and downs too, and everything that comes with, you know, being a cricketer in India. I think what really works for the book and something that kept me hooked on was the narrative style, the characterization of the leads, the cricketing analogies, the simple yet very engaging storyline, and the writing technique employed by Arjun, the discussion on mental health, it being set in the future, and a lot more aspects that really set this book apart.
The name Captain Khadus too has its own narrative and significance, and to get to know that, it is essential that you pick this book and definitely give it a go.
Yeah, and I think now we can, you know, get more into the book and everything. So to just kickstart the discussion, what inspired you to write the book?
See, I've been writing from a young age. This is something which I don't know, a lot of people know about me, but I used to write articles and submit it to my school magazine.
Okay.
And I would write on certain topics, and the editor of the school magazine, who was also a student, he would say that they were rejected. He said that they did not meet the standard. Now, whatever the standard was, I don't know, but it did not meet that standard.
Okay.
But that quality or whatever. But that did not stop me. I kept on writing. See, writing was something which I was pretty good at from a young age. And I started writing articles in my community magazine called the Canada Saraswat Magazine. And that was the first time, you know, where some articles which I wrote got a lot of good reviews, actually.
Okay.
And when I would go in some community gatherings, and people would signal me out and say that, you know, you've written a very good article, and, you know, that they appreciate it, and they found it very different. So I always thought that I'd write a book one day. I don't know when. So I wrote this Captain Khadus was the first idea that I actually got. Even though it was the second novel which I wrote, it was the first idea that I got.
Okay.
Now, I got that idea while playing a game on the computer. And, you know, there was an option in that game to create a customized player, an original player. So I created it as an all-rounder. See, I always wanted to be an all-rounder growing up. Even though I was not good, you always dream, right?
Yeah.
You always dream.
So
I wanted to be an all-rounder, a fast bowler, and a good batsman also. So I created that character. I gave it a name. And then I thought, you know, what kind of backstory would this character have? And that's how Captain Khadus started. Captain Khadus actually started in 2011.
Oh.
So it took me around 7-8 years till the time that the book got published. The book got published in December
2019. Okay.
It was a pretty long journey. And I'm glad that it took that much time, because I matured a lot along the way.
Okay.
And the characters matured, and the story became much more believable in a way.
Well-rounded, yeah, in a way.
So, yeah, that's something, yeah.
Okay. And who are, you know, some of the people who have helped you in this journey so far as an author and even as a working professional?
One person who has really helped me is Neil De Silva. He's he's India's number one horror writer.
Okay.
I knew him since the launch of my first book. Neil has always been somebody who has guided and supported upcoming Indian authors. So he's somebody who I have a lot of love and respect for.
Okay.
And he introduced me to Suhail Mathur of the Book Bakers Literary Agency. And Suhail became my literary agent.
Oh.
Now, Suhail is also a massive cricket fan. When I told him the story that the story of Captain Khadus, he liked it, and he said that he wanted to represent me and become a literary agent, my literary agent.
Okay.
So that's some of the people. And then the publishing, the publishers, Treeshed Books, which I got, they are somebody who have been really helpful. And, the support and guidance in publishing the book, editing and everything.
Okay.
And also many of my friends, one person I have a lot of respect for is Mr. Bipin Natkarni. He's a film director. He's got national awards.
Oh.
And he lives in my colony.
Okay.
And I always write a story and I show it to him first. And, he's somebody who I really look up to. And also my friends, my family. My really close friends and family. My family never discouraged me from writing.
Okay.
Nobody in my immediate family, to the best of my knowledge, has published a book. So when I told my parents at that time, when I told my family that I want to write a book, they were like, go for it. They didn't stop me from doing anything. I think that is something, they allowed me to, they let me take that chance which I wanted to take.
Yeah.
And that is something which I hope other parents also do when their children want to do something off track.
Yeah.
Off track within reasonable limits. Now, I did not quit my job and start writing a book. That would have been a little difficult
risky
for me to do.
Yeah.
There is. Yeah. So, that is, yeah, those are some of the people, you know, and also my close friends. One of them is Ritwik. Ritwik Natkar. He is my beta reader in a way, a lot of ways. He does not like reading at all, but for me, he makes an exception and he always reads.
Okay.
That's something which I really appreciate him for and respect him for. Yeah. These are some of the people.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think you did mention in the first question, right, that you took around 7 to 8 years to write this book. Okay. So, and you also did, you know, talk about what inspired you. But how did you plan it? You also mentioned you're a working professional. So how did all that pan out?
See, the story kind of unfolded to me very, very slowly. I always knew that I wanted the... See, when you write, you know, like when one writes a novel, especially a fictional novel, there has to be a conflict which the central character faces.
Yeah.
And that conflict has to be a believable conflict. It should be something which a lot of people go through. And depression is something which personally I've gone through a few times.
Okay.
And I've struggled with it and I've managed it sometimes well, sometimes not so well. And mental health in sportsmen, I thought there was not much written about it in India, especially in the fictional sense. So that was one thing which I thought that I wanted to have this as a background. See, the mental health portion of this novel is not explicitly written so much in the book, but I believe that an undercurrent is there.
Yeah, there is. Yeah,
the character reacts. How his behavior is. So Suraj, you know, like the main character in the novel, Suraj Bhatkal, is somebody who has suffered from depression, and depression changes the person.
Yeah.
It can make or break a person, actually. And it can make the confidence of a person go down. Now, there was one sequence in the novel where he is made the captain. And he's a reluctant captain to begin with.
Yeah.
And that is something which stems from the fact that he's gone through something as traumatic as depression, which has taken up his confidence to quite an extent.
So
these are some of the things which, and I always wanted to write a sports novel. See, my favorite one, some of my favorite movies have been sports movies. You know, and one complaint which I've always had with sports movies is that they have not, some of them have not focused that much on the action on the, you know, like action on the field.
Okay.
Some of them are about, you know, his off, you know, the character's off-field exploits and their affairs and this and that and everything. You know,
yeah.
Which personally I don't have much interest for.
Okay.
So I thought that if I'm going to write a sports novel, it is going to be predominantly what happens on the field. How he deals with what happens on the field, how he manages those things.
Yeah.
So these are some of the things which I kept in mind while writing the book.
Okay. And I did read your book. I binge read your book in a day. And I have to say the book was really well written. But I think one of the first questions that did come to my mind was, why is the book set in future? Like the novel is set in 2025, right? The story.
Yes,
why was that?
Yeah. See, one, as I said, you know, mental health is one of the important themes of this background themes of this novel.
Right. Yeah.
And as of now, as a country, even now, in 2021, we don't really accept that mental health issues are a big problem in our country. And I hope why I said this novel in 2025 was this mad optimist inside of me wanted to hope that in 2025 things would be different. This I started writing in, you know, I really got to writing it properly in 2017.
Okay.
So, 6 years was spent in procrastination, research, and, you know, kind of not knowing how to go ahead with the novel. But I was always thinking about it. And I thought that in 2017, 2025 may be a good time when people have some awareness about it. And acceptance about it. More important than awareness is acceptance about it. So this is one reason why I had it in 2025. Yeah, that optimist in me wanted to hope that things were better for people who have suffered and continue to suffer from mental health problems. Yeah.
Fair enough. And also, like, when we have a look at the title of your book, it says Captain Khadus. Yeah. And for our listeners who are going to, you know, pick this book up soon, we see how, you know, Suraj's character kind of progresses into this Captain Khadus. So for you, Arjun, like, how did you come up with the title of the book? Like, you know, did it happen naturally as the story progressed? How did that happen?
I give quite a bit of the credit of this to my friend Adishree, who is also a very big cricket fan. And I wanted the name to be Captain Grumpy initially. But Captain Grumpy was, you know, Alan Border, ex-Australian captain, was called Captain Grumpy. Because he was a grumpy guy on the field. And Grumpy did not really resonate with the character that much to me. So, you know, Suraj is the character that much to me. Now, just to give a bit of a background, Suraj is a cricketer from Mumbai. And in Mumbai cricketing circles, Mumbai cricketers, especially of the 70s and 80s, they have they were called Khadus players. Because especially the Mumbai batsmen, based on my research that I've done, and also talking to people about it, that, see, Mumbai was a very strong team in the 70s and 80s and 90s also. And there was a point in time where half the Indian team was made up of players from Mumbai. And to break into the Mumbai side meant that you were already one step into the Indian cricket team. Now, to break into the Mumbai side took a lot of hard work. And in Mumbai, which has a history of, you know, developing really great batsmen like Sunil Gavaskar, Dilip Vengsarkar, just to name a few. And after that came Sachin Tendulkar and Vinod Kambli, obviously. Vinod Kambli did not really fulfill his promise as much as he should have. People say that he was more talented than Sachin Tendulkar also. But that's what they say about him. So, see, to break into a side which is filled with so many superstars, one had to do something really extraordinary. And one had to put a price on their wicket. And to put a price on their wicket, you know, one has to be tough, uncompromising, and Khadus. And Khadus is generally what Mumbai cricketers were called. And still old-time, old-school Mumbai cricketers, like, you know, Sanjay Manjrekar also is an old-school Mumbai cricketer. He used to play in Mumbai. He used to, you know, like, he's a product of, you know, he's a product of the Mumbai system. So is Amol Muzumdar, who unfortunately did not get a chance to play for India. But these players, you know, they were, they were Khadus. And Khadus is Khadus Panti, or stubbornness in a loose translation, is something which definitely comes a lot in Mumbai cricketers because of the struggle. See, a lot of these cricketers, a lot of these cricketers have lived in the suburbs of Mumbai. And the main grounds are in the town side of Mumbai, in the city side of Mumbai. And to go from the, you know, to go from the suburbs to the town side of Mumbai, which is roughly one and a half hours, at least one way. You know, one has to travel in jam-packed trains with full bag full of gear and everything, bats and pads and everything. You know, that really toughens up a person. All Mumbai cricketers have gone through that, even Rohit Sharma. Rohit Sharma is somebody who really struggled from day one itself. You know, Rohit Sharma, you know, he used to live in a suburb of Mumbai called Borivali. Now, Borivali is 1.5 hours away from town side in Mumbai, where, you know, a lot of the established grounds are. And Mumbai, it has to be realized that Mumbai is a place where not many grounds are there. Because a lot of buildings are coming up, and it's difficult, especially now, to find places to play. So what happens is players, you know, these young kids who are traveling 2 hours one way, just to get a chance to play, you know, when they get that chance, they don't leave it. They try to make the most of it. That is where there is, see, Mumbai is a very loving city. I really love Mumbai with all my heart. I'm a Bombay guy, you know, like, I'm a
Authentic.
Mumbai had modern bread. Yeah, authentic. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, and there is something very tough and very lovable about Mumbai, which I really, really like. And one of them is the cricketers that we produce.
I think that does kind of answer my question really well. And in your previous answers too, you did reflect on how your family and some of your friends have played such a instrumental role, right, in your life and how they supported you and everything. So my question is, are the characters in your story inspired by real people? If so, could you, you know, spill the beans, let us know more?
See, it's a, the character is a totally original character. It is loosely based on what I would have liked to be as a cricketer if I had any talent and any determination and to put in effort into that field.
But
still, certain traits of my favorite cricketers have crept into the mannerisms of his play, especially. Like, I have thought that his batting style would be a bit like Shivnarayan Chandrapal. One reason why is because, see, flamboyant batsmen are looked upon with a lot of admiration.
Yeah.
But the batsmen who don't have that much flair are may not be, you know, they may not be looked upon with as much awe as one would a flamboyant batsman. And I wanted this character to be somebody who makes batting look difficult.
Yeah.
I mean, he's somebody who struggles. He struggles to connect. That is somebody like me, you know, I find it difficult to get started on a particular task that I have. It's like starting a car in the morning sometimes, you know, it takes time to start, right? So I'm something like that, and I wanted that to come out. See, I don't particularly like it when things are made to look effortless. When things become a little tough, you know, there is a bit of fun in that when you achieve things.
Yeah.
That was something that, is, that I got into the character. And also the bowling, I thought, see, the character is an, what is, like the character is an all-rounder. Surajan is a fast bowling all-rounder, which I so badly hope we get one day. Frontline bowler and amazing middle order batsman or top order batsman. And his bowling, his journey of his bowling, if you, you have read the novel. So in that have described how he learns reverse swing. How he
in each of the stages, it's like super inspiring, you know, the journey he had.
So I read a lot about it. I followed one cricketer who I really have a lot of admiration for is Zahir Khan. He was dropped in 2005. And when he went to England, and when he came back, he was like totally different. You know, I've really followed Zahir Khan's career very, very closely. And that was something which I thought I wanted to incorporate into the bowling of Suraj's, bowling of Suraj in the, in the book. So that was, and captaincy wise, you know, bits, shades of Anil Kumble, I thought were also there. Not backing down, but showing a lot of composure also. Though Suraj, the character, did go off the hook at times in the novel, but I mean, that's how the characters I develop are. I don't want my characters to be perfect. I want a bit of, confusion to be there, a bit of conflict to be there within the reader themselves, that when they read, I want them to feel that, why is the character doing like this? I don't like squeaky clean characters because they are not a proper representation of what human beings are. Humans are, human beings are imperfect creatures.
Absolutely, their behavior
and everything is imperfect. So I wanted that to come through in this novel. There are some points where he behaves very badly. After a few instances where, you know, where the team loses and everything. I won't spill the beans too much. But I mean, there are some times where he does things which are not borderline. You know, he does things which are borderline unethical.
And I think that, that's what really makes him human as well, right? Because flaws are just very human,
That is something which I wanted in the book from day one itself. I wanted an Indian captain who has not been like any other Indian captains before. Who is not a good boy or sanskari bacha or whatever, you know, well-behaved boy and stuff like that, you know. Who has his own self-confidence, who is combative, and who, you know, gives it back to the opponent. That is something which I wanted to show in the character.
Okay. And I think even at the start of this interview, you did talk about how you also like had bouts of depression and everything. So, I mean, why did you choose the theme of mental health? I mean, yeah, obviously with your personal reflection also coming in. And at the start of your book, especially in that author's note part, you did talk about, you know, awareness and acceptance as, you know, key tenets to understanding the realm of depression. Would you like to talk about it a little more?
Yes. See, awareness and acceptance. I think awareness is where we are at a stage right now in a country where people are aware of what there is something known as depression, especially with the lockdown, the COVID-19 pandemic and everything.
Yeah.
A lot of people have struggled with depression, but also at the same time, you know, see, depression is a very, I personally believe that the people who have really suffered from depression don't talk about it openly. Because they know what kind of reaction they get from people.
Yeah.
And sometimes it is also from people who they consider near and dear to them. See, people don't understand this, or they don't want to be seen to be understanding this. Based on my experiences so far. See, I think we as a country are, you know, with all our rich history and everything, one thing which I really have a reservation about our country is that we are kind of swerving towards being a pseudo macho kind of society wherein showing weakness, showing vulnerability is looked upon as being a bad thing. Now, this is purely my personal interpretation. I've not discussed this with many, very many people. But, you know, suffering from depression does not show that one is a weak person.
Yeah.
I think that is one thing which I strongly believe. It's like, see, the brain is also part of the body, right? Brain is not different. I mean, I've given an example in the book. I've given an allegory sort of a thing. People who have suffered from diabetes and who take insulin shots on a daily basis and manage their lives are looked upon with such a degree of inspiration by the people around them.
Yeah.
Now they look at them and say, and you know, they say, wow, you know, you're managing it so well and everything. But when it comes to depression, everybody's like, you know, they stop then and there. They're like, they talk in hushed tones, they whisper and they talk behind their back and say, what is wrong with this man or woman or whatever. So
true. Yeah.
And also the things that how people have suffered from depression are spoken to. I think that is something also which I've put out in the author's note. If one suffers from depression and one decides to speak out about it to somebody, that is, I believe that requires a lot of courage. Because that person is going to be judged, that person is going to be questioned. And a lot of the questions which have come, especially in my way, when I've spoken to people about it who I trusted at that time, they have been like, oh, you know, why are you doing this to yourself? Why don't you snap out of it? You know, why are you so negative? See, the thing is that nobody likes to feel bad.
Yeah.
And with depression, things become really, really bad. Getting out of bed in the morning is very, very difficult. That's the most difficult part of the day. Now, nobody is going to willingly put oneself through such kind of suffering. Just for whatever reason. I mean, I don't know what people have in their mind when they say that, why are you doing this to yourself?
Yeah.
And that's a very bad, a very nasty thing to say.
Insensitive,
Very, very insensitive thing to say. And people, when they are, see, even when one is suffering from depression, there are good times and there are very bad times also. One feels good for some time and then there are certain things where things go really bad, when everything seems very dark and gloomy and hopeless. Now in that time, I've written a few things. Of course, this is my non-medical opinion. I'm not a doctor, so I'm not a mental specialist. But these are some things which I came across, which my father also told me, and which made sense to me after some time. That, you know, like when you're in a highly charged emotional state, whether it's a sense of euphoric happiness or really down in the drains sadness or depression or whatever, one should not take any drastic life altering decisions. that is something which are mentioned in the book. Now, again, I mean, will we be a society who will accept this? I hope so, but I'm not very optimistic about it.
Okay.
Because I've seen what people treat, how people talk about others who have suffered from it. Firsthand.
Yeah.
I've experienced it myself. So I know what people think about such things in a city like Mumbai, which is, you know, supposed to be, which is one of the most modern cities in our country.
Hmm.
Well, this is not to say that people in the who live in the villages or the non-metros are not modern or not forward-thinking.
Hmm.
But we have this thing in our mind that, you know, people in a city will have a progressive way of thinking, incorrectly so also.
Hmm.
Incorrectly, you may think that. But I've seen people who live in Mumbai, educated people, people who have got professional degrees, they say things like, I just to elaborate, I saw one post on LinkedIn.
Hmm.
And it was like, how do you treat depression?
Okay.
There were 5 or 6 options. Some of them were self-treatment, meditation, yoga, this, that.
Mm-hmm.
And the last one was, you know, seek medical help.
Hmm.
Now, when the poll came out, when the guy who had put the poll, when that poll came out, you know, like when the poll results came out, seeking medical help was like hardly 5-6% of 100%.
Hmm.
This is what people think about right now in 2021. If somebody has diabetes, will one, I mean, not go to a doctor? Or will one go to a doctor?
Hmm.
Why do we look at mental health issues so differently?
Yeah.
That is something which even now, I think nothing has changed. And a lot of the so-called... there are a lot of people who talk about it. They say, you know, this really gets me a little riled up in a way. People say that I love talking about mental health. I mean, the people who have gone through mental health don't talk about it because they know what they've gone through.
Hmm.
And this is a topic which is in the, you know, which is spoken about. So they just want to tap into a hot topic, I guess.
Hmm.
Some of them may have good intentions. Some of them may not. I don't know how many have good and how many don't have good intentions.
Hmm.
But this is something which I believe is a very, very, very big problem in our country. Mental health is a real, really big problem in our country, and we are not dealing with it well.
Yeah. And you also did talk about how, you know, while writing the book, it was a very transformative journey for you. You learned a lot. You used the word mature as well. Could you talk about some of those experiences and about, you know, your writing processes? Like, you were a first-time author, although you had a published book. But how was the whole process like?
See, I had to start from scratch again.
Hmm.
Every book, one has to start from scratch again.
Yeah.
It's like a new inning. Just because you scored 100 in the previous inning does not mean that you're going to, you know, start from 101. One has to start from zero again.
Yeah.
So I had made a few mistakes in my first novel.
Mm.
I could have been more diligent in the editing. Mm. Now, in this novel, considering the subject matter, considering everything else, I decided that I'm going to be very diligent and very thorough in my editing.
Mm.
Because the storyline is very subjective. People may like it, people may not like it. The action which goes on the field, if cricketers read it, I've not had any cricketer come up to me and tell me that whether it is authentic or not authentic.
Hmm.
And I did not know any cricketer at that time to guide me on what really happens behind the dressing room, you know, what happens in the dressing room and all that.
Yeah.
So I had to write from my own, my own imagination, I guess.
Hmm.
Which may be accurate, may not be accurate. I don't know.
Hmm.
But see, there are certain things which stand out, like editing. It can either be good or it can be bad.
Hmm.
There is nothing objective about editing.
Yeah.
So then, you know, like, there's nothing subjective about editing.
Mm-hmm.
Editing is either good or bad. So I did what I could properly. And I ensured that when the book comes out, there is not going to be a single editing mistake in the book. And I would edit the book every day for at least 2-3 months, I remember. I would go through the book every day.
Oh.
And that was the amount of work that I really put into this. And when I was really fed up with editing, I gave it to my mother and told her that, you know what, please go through this and tell me what you think.
Hmm.
Because, see, when you go through something so many times, everything seems the same.
Yeah.
You can't spot any mistakes. It's difficult to spot mistakes.
Hmm.
So you need a third person to, you need a, another person to give an outsider's view to that.
Yeah.
That was, and also, I was worried about it being very cricket action heavy.
Hmm.
Because this, I'm pretty sure that there's not been a cricket action book written like this before.
Hmm.
I did not come across it. I don't know if there are. I should probably pick up one and read one.
Hmm.
But you know, like read that. But see, I did not have any point of reference for this novel. It was totally what I thought was going on. Everything was totally original in this book. That was where it was very challenging and very beautiful also.
Yeah. Okay. And what, according to you, you know, is the most difficult part of the writing process?
See, writing is hardly 10% of the process, writing process.
Hmm.
It's my experience so far. A lot of the time goes in rewriting, editing, re-editing, again and again, editing the same thing over and over again.
Right, yeah.
When one really writes, that is in a spur of inspirational, you know, you have inspiration and you write.
Hmm.
That is what you get. But then, actually, what starts out with what you thought, you know, what you think is the story and how it ends up is totally different.
Hmm.
The same thing happened with Captain Kadus. What I thought it was going to be at the starting and what it ended up being was like something different only.
Hmm.
Along the way, a lot of things changed. And I surprised myself really. I did not think that I had it in me to be diligent about editing, because editing is something which I have never liked. And usually authors, I think many authors would not like editing.
Hmm.
Because I think reading one's own writing is, I find it very difficult.
True, yeah.
I find it difficult to read my own writing because You know, if you write something in a spurt of inspiration, you know, when that inspiration goes and you look at it, you know, you may think that what possessed me to write that?
Hmm.
So that's what something, you know, which I really surprised myself, and I've got no hesitation in saying that I was very proud of myself. This book, I was very proud of.
Yeah. Okay. And, you know, this is just another question I had. Like, what comes first to you, the plot or the characters, and why the specific sequence?
See, both come together to me personally.
Okay.
To me, both the characters and the story can't be separated.
Hmm.
Because how the character is will also define how the story goes.
Right, yeah.
This is based on my thoughts and, you know, based on what I've gone through and so far as an author. So yeah, this is something which I think both go together. I can't separate the two. Yeah.
Okay. And I think this might be a slightly tricky question, but why do you think that there is, you know, a scarcity of mental health experts in cricket? And I think you can also talk in the larger picture sports. And why is there this stigma, you know, towards seeking help or even talking about it? And do you think the situation is getting better? I mean, I do understand there is a need to, you know, end the stigma regarding mental health in cricket and in sports. So what do you think are, you know, some of the measures that can be employed?
I think mental health experts, mental health professionals are there with sides, teams, especially the Indian teams, considering that we are going through such a, you know, COVID-19 pandemic and the bubble that the teams go through, have to live in.
Yeah.
It's not easy. Even though you're living with somebody who you like and, you know, cherish and everything, after some time, looking at the same person day in and day out is going to become difficult.
Hmm.
It is going to be like another episode of Big Boss. It's going to be difficult.
Yeah.
So I personally think that there are mental health professionals who guide our cricketers.
Hmm.
I don't know why a lot of cricketers, serving cricketers, current cricketers don't talk about it that much. I think a lot of it has to do with the way it is perceived. I think England cricketers, Marcus Trescothicket came out in 2006 with his issues with mental health and depression. Jonathan Trott came out and said that. Glenn Maxwell came out in 2019. But even in 2019, I mean, I didn't really see any voices of support from Indian cricketers for what Glenn Maxwell was going through. I think a lot of it is to do with how it is perceived. And I think some cricketers, I won't name them, some cricketers who are currently playing for India seem to be more worried about their social media status, their social media images, their social media image than many more other things. I won't name them. It'll become too controversial, but I really see when somebody's in a position of that much power and when one has a chance to probably make a difference. See, I've gone through it. And if I see somebody who is at that high level in life, such a high level in life, and if he or she says, I've gone through depression, I've overcome it, I've managed it, and here is where I am. This is where you can be. This is what you can and you should aspire to be.
Yeah.
See, when one goes through depression, especially, I can talk about depression because I've been through it. I don't know about any other mental health issues as such. I've not really read about them that much. But with depression, life at certain points in time seems hopeless. It seems that things cannot be good. It's a lost cause, basically. There's no point in doing things sometimes. That's what it feels like. And from that absolute bottom point to reach to wherever we are in life, that shows real guts and courage.
I think that
presence of vulnerability, weakness is not a bad thing. Bravery is not the absence of fear. Bravery is the strength that one shows in overcoming the fear.
Yeah.
This was in Prince's Diaries, I think. This is something which I hope we really, really realize. But let's see. I don't want to be too pessimistic about things.
True, yeah. And just coming back to, the background work that went with your book and everything. Yeah. So what's your, favorite and least favorite part of publishing, right? The editing process and everything?
Editing definitely was not at all enjoyable for me. Yeah. But okay. I hope I can fast forward the editing phase of writing a book. But then I can't, I can't be in control of the final product, right?
Yeah.
That's a necessary pain that one has to go through. And the author has to go through, yeah.
Any favorite aspects,
Definitely it is ideating, I guess. Thinking about stories, thinking about where the story can go, where the character, what the character can do. I think these are some things which are very enjoyable.
Yeah.
But I think editing is like exercising. It cannot be outsourced beyond an extent.
Yeah.
A lot of the heavy lifting has to be done by the authors themselves. I truly believe that.
Okay.
So editing, no matter how unpleasant it is, I have to bite the bullet and have to do it myself, no matter how hard it feels for me.
Yeah. And you did talk about the research that you actually did for this book. So how long did that take? And how enjoyable was the process? And what were some of the new things you stumbled across when you were at it?
So I didn't particularly sit down and do research. It was a very unconscious thing for me.
Okay.
I love cricket. So reading about cricket and cricket stories was like a enjoyable pastime for me.
Bonus,
when
yeah.
When I'm having lunch, I will probably just, go through a few articles and read and everything. So, that's how the research was in a way. It was very unplanned, very, very enjoyable. I never felt like it was work. I didn't know that it was research at all. That's how enjoyable it was.
And I think there are parts in your book which is, you know, like emotionally invests you. Like, you know, you want to see what is going to happen to the character, and there's so much happening, there's conflict and everything. So yeah. How emotionally invested were you when you were writing those parts? And how, and also you could talk about some of the hardest parts of the book to write. You could elaborate, yeah.
Yeah, there were some hard parts which I still read and I still get pumped up and emotional.
Mm-hmm.
There was one part which, okay, I'll go through one part where Suraj is injured in a pivotal match.
Yeah.
And he decides to go out on the field even though he's injured. And his father tells him that, you know, go out and get them, you know, something like that. So
mm-hmm.
I think that is something which I read still now. I read even now. I go through my book sometimes. And I find that moment pumps me up also to an extent. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That is some, that that was an emotional and emotional moment which really pumped me up. Yeah.
Okay. And you know, who are some of your favorite authors? Like, this can be non-cricket authors. Uh-huh. And what do you like the best about them? Like, how have they inspired your writing style and any other takeaways?
I have a few authors. I am reading non-fiction as of now mainly.
Okay.
But I would not like to take any names of favorite authors, mm-hmm. but I would like to say that my writing style, or I never intended to have this writing style that I have.
Mm-hmm.
I have read reviews of my first novel and my Captain Curlews also.
Okay.
Wherein people have, reviewers have commented that my writing style is very simple.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to me, that's a very good thing.
Okay.
Because making things simple is, to me, the, you know, like a very difficult thing to do.
Hmm.
And simplifying things is very difficult. Complicating things, over complicating things is very, very easy.
Hmm.
I find that very easy. And explaining something in layman's terms is very difficult.
Yeah.
And so that is something which, see, I think an author should go with the flow at times.
Hmm.
And with this, certain things, I just went with the flow. You know, I didn't, you know, really intend to write in a sophisticated manner or, you know, complicated manner. I don't like that. I don't like, when I'm reading a book, I don't want to sit with a dictionary by my side.
Mm-hmm.
I don't. So when I was writing a book, I didn't want my prospective readers to be like, you know, what does this word mean?
Mm.
Or whatever, you know. So that was something, you know, which I really wanted. Simplifying things was what I truly believe in.
Right, yeah. And I think I'm just going to ask two more questions before we conclude this segment and move on to a more exciting section as well. Okay. How do you react to criticism? Like, you know, some of the reviews that your book got. So how do you, you know, perceive that?
I have some very few people who are very close to me.
Hmm.
And when those people say things with good intentions, I listen to them and I try to make changes accordingly.
Hmm.
But see, one thing one has to realize is that everybody does not have good intentions.
Yeah.
And everybody is not honest all the time.
Hmm.
Especially when it comes to giving one's views. See, it's looked upon as being very intellectual to give criticism.
Yeah.
Over here, it's important to know the strengths and weaknesses of one's own writing.
Hmm.
Like, as I said earlier, the strength of my novel was editing. Of Captain Curlews was definitely, for me, it was editing.
Yeah.
So if I knew that there are certain things which will stand out and that is good editing. So a couple of people, one person went through the book and he said the editing is not good. I was like, this guy's trying to, you know, I didn't agree with that guy. I didn't confront him.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, it's sometimes there's no use talking to a person who's already made up their mind.
Yeah.
You know. When your strong point is criticized by somebody who don't consider close to you or who don't value that much,
mm-hmm.
and an outsider gives you that kind of comment, you know, you take it with a pinch of salt and take every criticism and praise with a pinch of salt.
Yeah.
And see, when the book comes out, hopefully it will get attention. And a lot of people want to score brownie points and stuff. So, you know, they'll say all great things and everything. But one has to know what is genuine and what is not, and what is not genuine, and that's a very, very difficult thing to do. Yeah. I personally think with this novel, Captain Khadus, I was able to make out what is genuine and what's not genuine. And like, I had showed the cover to a couple of people. One of them was like, he looked at the, that person looked at the cover and said that this cover looks juvenile.
Okay.
Before even reading the book. That person went through the blurb and said, why don't you write about the decline of test cricket?
Okay.
Why don't you write about the crowds not coming to the ground? I'm like, that's not the plot that I have in mind for this novel, but maybe the next one I may think about it.
Okay. But
a lot of people, see, when you ask somebody their opinion, it puts them in a position of power.
Yeah.
And people like to be in a position of power, and a lot of people don't know how to handle it very well. So they misuse it.
Yeah.
So it's very important to, you know, realize what is genuine and what's not genuine. And that's something which I got with this book as of now. I hope I have it in the future also.
Yeah. And I think this brings me to my last and final question for this segment, right? Like, you did talk about how, you know, take criticism with a pinch of salt and to, you know, acknowledge the difference between what are some good reviews and bad reviews. So what would be some of the tips you have for young upcoming authors, and what are some of your own upcoming projects and, you know, plans?
Firstly, tip, my suggestions for a few upcoming, you know, for upcoming authors is, firstly, be realistic. I think a lot of people, you know, when they get to know me and they're like, oh, you know, you're an author, they have a certain image in mind.
Yeah.
That is of the best-selling author, you know, who has a lot of fans and this and that and everything. But, you know, there is only one Chetan Bhagat. There is only one J.K. Rowling. There is only one George R.R. Martin. The number of authors in our country as of now are in the millions.
Yeah.
And how many of those people, how many of those authors are, I won't use the word successful, how many of them are known? How many good books actually end up being successful, end up selling, you know, huge number of copies? So one has to be realistic in what one wants when one writes a book. And one should aim to tell a story, not be preachy about things. This is where some people get carried away. They put in their own personal ethics and views and whatever, whatnot, into the characters, and, you know, the characters go off into these monologues and rants and stuff, you know, which is basically the author ranting himself or herself.
Yeah.
I find that very unappealing.
Okay.
So one has to, you know, just tell a story. That's as simple as that. You know, one has a power and the opportunity to tell a story, and one should be responsible with that power. And even be very diligent with the editing work, the marketing, be very clever with that. And even when the book comes out, and even if it does not do well, one should not write oneself off. I mean, my first novel sold less than, I don't want to take numbers, but
okay,
it's definitely less than 3 digits, definitely, for sure. But did that stop me from writing another novel? Now, here it is important to accept failure, which is another thing which people in the country have a big problem with.
Yeah.
The willingness to fail. One has to show the willingness to take that chance of failing. Take that chance and say that, okay, you know what, things may not work out and I may fail.
Yeah.
But still have the faith in oneself to get up and go at it again. That is something which, it's more of a mental aspect than a skill aspect, I think.
True, yeah. You know,
a decent story can be made into a very good story with a with a good amount of diligent editing. But a great story with bad editing and half-hearted writing or whatever, will not end up being a good book.
Okay. So, and you were telling something.
So these are some of the things which I would suggest authors to keep in mind. Upcoming or prospective authors.
And the other second part of my question was about some of your upcoming projects and plans that, you know, you'd like to acquaint us.
Yeah, so I have a few ideas in my mind. Hmm. Some of them are cricket, some of them are not cricket.
Okay.
Sorry, sports, not cricket, sports.
Okay.
Now, I don't want to reveal too much about them, mm-hmm. but there's definitely a few things which I'm working on.
Okay.
And I don't want to restrict myself as a genre-specific author or writer.
Mm-hmm.
I want to surprise whatever, you know, how many of our people who are eager to read my work.
Mm.
You know, like, for example, there are certain authors who only write romantic books.
Yeah.
So people know, you know, he or she is going to write a romantic novel. But with me, I don't want to be like that. Even though I love sports, I'm passionate about sports, and I would like to write about sports.
Yeah.
But if there is an idea which really comes to me, I want to go for it.
Okay.
And I am going for it. So these are some things which I know I have not answered your question, but you know, this is as clear as I can get. Like as clear as an answer I can give as of now. Yeah.
That's absolutely fine. That really gives all of us listeners something to look forward to, and the listeners who will read your book, understand your style of writing, and actually look forward to these projects. So thank you for shedding light on that as well.
Sure.
And we now move on to the last and final segment of this episode, the rapid fire round, where you can answer it in one word or just one line, because some of the questions require you to think a little. So are you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready. Yeah, why not?
Okay, yeah. So how would you pitch your book to a non-cricket fan? This is Captain Khadus. How are you going to pitch it to a non-cricket fan?
That's a tough question, but I think I'll, I'll offer them free copies, I guess, signed free copies. I don't know any other way.
Okay,
because,
yeah.
This is a very niche genre, I guess, which sports fiction, I guess, not really...
explored, yeah.
Written that much, yeah. A lot of potential there, but I'm not sure it's been really written about that much. So that's a really tough question. I guess the only answer that I have is I'll probably ask them that I'll give them free copies.
Okay. And your favorite non-cricket book?
Non-cricket book.
Yeah.
There are quite a few, actually. Anuj Dhar is an author.
Okay.
Who has written non-fiction books on Netaji Subhash Chandra Bose and the mystery of his disappearance and stuff like that. So, some of his books I've read them.
Okay.
And those were really eye opening, and the courage that it took for him to write that book. Him and Chandrachud Ghosh is co-author in that book. The subject matter was very controversial, but he was very diligent. I thought he was very amazing in his research and everything in that. So that is something which, that is definitely one of my favorite non-cricket books. Yeah.
Okay. And tell us something about yourself that we likely don't know.
Yeah. So, I mean, the people who know me would probably know this. That I am somebody who I like sharing memes and stuff.
Okay.
Memes and, I probably can have a proper conversation without writing anything, just through memes and gifs.
Okay.
That is something which which may surprise a few people, because, you know, when people meet me sometimes, they're like, oh, you know, I'm very reserved and everything, which I am. I'm a very reserved person.
Okay.
But when I get comfortable with a person, you know, then those things come out.
Yeah.
I think memes are something which I've started developing an interest for during the lockdown.
Okay.
And memes are something which spread laughs and happiness, and the lockdown was very difficult for us.
Okay.
And I thought I could do a little bit, which I could, you know. Some of the memes were recycled, you know, some of those memes I had copied from other people and I shared.
Yeah.
Some memes I created myself, and this is something. And one more thing about me is that I like karaoke, singing. I'm not good at singing.
Okay.
But I like attention.
Okay.
And sometimes when some of my friends go out for to a karaoke establishment,
mm-hmm.
then I'm the first one who goes and sings a song. So if somebody okay. does not know me, they'll be like, where did this guy come up with this? But that's how I am. That's okay. a hidden part of me, which is, I guess, not so hidden anymore.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. And who's your go-to person for advice?
There's no one person. Different things, different issues have different people, I guess.
Okay.
Earlier, it used to be my dad, but he's no more, unfortunately.
Okay.
So it was my dad. But now, if it is any writing-related issue, then it is either Mr. Neil De Silva or my literary agent, Suhail. If it is any, family relationship-related issue, then I have a few friends of mine.
Okay.
So, professional issue, or just wanting somebody to have to talk to. You know, I have a couple of my best friends with whom I'm in constant touch with.
Okay.
I share my views with them. They share their views with me. We don't usually agree on all things, but that's what true friendship is about, you know.
Yeah.
One should not necessarily agree on all things.
And what's one book you wish you'd written?
One book which I wish I'd written. There is a book called Man in the High Castle, which I want to read. There is an Amazon Prime has made a TV series on that.
Oh.
That is an alternate history novel. Wherein, I'm a big history fan also. I love reading about history and stuff. So that is another passion of mine. So Man in the High Castle is a imagined scenario wherein in World War II, what would have happened if Japan and Germany had won World War II? What would the world look like?
Yeah.
So these are some things which the what if has always fascinated me.
Okay.
That is something which I wish I had written a book on that. But there's that one book. But that being said, I'm really proud of both the books that I've written, because even my first novel, even though it did not really do that well commercially, I really believed in the story. It was an offbeat story, I think.
Okay.
And even this, the novel Captain Caduce, it was, I think, a potentially risky offbeat story, with the help of many, many people, I managed to get out, and it has got success to a large extent. And a lot of the success goes to the advice and the support that all these people have given me.
Yeah. And I know this is again going to be a tricky one. If you could spend time any character, you know, from any of from Captain Caduce, who would it be and what would you do?
Probably that psychologist, Aditi.
Okay.
Because she would probably give me a few advice sometimes when I'm confused.
My follow-up question would be, who in your opinion is, you know, the most underrated author? Like, this is according to you.
No name comes to my mind as of now.
Okay.
But I think, based on based on my observations, that Indian authors as a whole are underappreciated by Indian readers themselves.
Okay.
A lot of Indians have grown up reading foreign authors, including myself. I grew up reading Hardy Boys, Secret Seven, Famous Five, and all that.
Yeah.
So one associates fun and enjoyment to foreign writers, because that's what we relate our childhood for. But, you know, there are some people, quite a few people, I don't know if they're in the majority or in the minority number of people, but there are a significant number of people who, as a principle, don't read or don't say good things about Indian books, which there is a bias against them.
Okay.
Bias that they have against Indian books. And this is a grouse which a lot of Indian authors themselves have expressed.
Yeah.
And I'm a part of a few authors groups. And that dissatisfaction, that anger against this preconceived notion of Indians not being able to write well, you know, it causes a lot of frustration. Because writing a book is a very difficult thing. And then on top of that, you got to, you know, fight the preconceived notions that people have.
Yeah.
I think that's another battle which I wish we didn't have to, we as authors didn't have to fight.
I think, yeah, you answered that really well. And we just left with the last three rapid fire questions. So what's your favorite A, film, B, album, and C, artist?
Film would probably be the Rocky series.
Okay.
Rocky Balboa series.
Hmm.
Artist. What do you mean artist? I mean, what do
this
you
can
mean
be artist? Anyone, like an actor or like a musical artist or anyone, yeah.
I think one actor who I usually don't, you know, I look up to actors in a way. But one actor who I really, he's probably the only actor I follow on social media is Vicky Kaushal. So Vicky Kaushal has consistently taken different roles.
Yeah.
Now, whether it was the first time, the first movie I saw him in was Sanju, this biopic of Sanjay Dutt.
Yeah.
Now, in that, he was playing this skinny Gujarati guy.
Hmm.
Now, I was like thinking, you know, who is he? I don't know who he is, but he did a very good job. Now, okay. I had not seen that movie Razi. I saw the movie Razi later, and then when I realized this is the same guy, I was like, how is this possible? He's totally transformed himself.
Yeah.
And he's not taken the safe choice.
Hmm.
Even with Uri, the Surgical Strike, which is the movie which I've seen four times in the theater. That was a movie which was an amazing movie.
Yeah.
So even this current movie of his which came out, Sardar Uddham, which is on a topic which is not, I don't know how many people know about him, about the character in question.
Yeah.
About the person in question. But the movie was very, very well made. And, you know, it was a very risky movie to, I guess, you know, to make such a movie. I mean, the format of the movie was, it was a slow movie, but it really grew on me.
Yeah.
And he's taken those choices, which his next movie is on General Manekshaw, who was the head of the, of the army. So, I mean, he has consistently taken the offbeat track. He can't be compartmentalized as a romantic hero or an action hero or whatever. He does everything rather well, pretty well actually. And I would, if Captain Kharus is made into a movie, I would like him to play Suraj. I know that is wishful thinking, but I hope that happens.
Yeah, I do hope that happens. And the last and final question is, what has been the toughest criticism and the best compliment you've received for your book?
Criticism. Actually, none of the criticism that I've got really hurt me that much, except for the preconceived notions which I've mentioned few people had without reading the book. And best compliment which I have got is from my literary agent Suhail Mathur, who always refers to me as best-selling author, as our best-selling author of the literary agency. And that is something which, you know, I'm a little, I'm not used to that. I mean, he's somebody who has really guided me and helped me along the way. And when a guy of his stature says best-selling author, it feels surreal, actually, you know.
Yeah.
That tag being given to somebody like me, a normal guy like me. In a way, I find that a little difficult to digest. Sometimes I tell him, you know, don't say this and all that. But, you know, he insists on saying that all the time. You know, whenever he...
Yeah.
Most of the time when he refers to me, And he always says that Captain Kharus is, according to him, one of the finest sports fiction novels that has come out.
Yeah.
One of the, of late. So that is something which I respect him for, showering me with so much love and respect. Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, that kind of concludes our rapid fire section and this episode.
Yeah.
So, I'd like to take this opportunity to thank you, you know, for taking time off your busy schedule and, you know, sharing your thoughts. This has been a brilliant interview, like super insightful. And I'm sure my listeners will be, you know, able to resonate with so many of the thoughts and everything you had. And as much as I'm tempted to ask you more questions, because, you know, the answers were so lovely and this discussion can go on and on, I'd also like to ask you a lot more questions about the book, the characters, and more on the rationale and everything. I'd probably give away the plot to our listeners, so I will stop now and, you know, give them a chance to read, you know, a very good book. So yeah, you've been super cooperative and it has been an absolute pleasure, you know, working with you. This was a great collaboration and I'd love to have you on the podcast again. Hopefully, you know, you would have written more books and, you know, we can have another insightful discussion. So till then, take care and bye.
I'd like to also thank you for the, you know, like giving me the opportunity for coming on your esteemed podcast and, you know, really, really means a lot for an author like me. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for your time.
With this, we come to an end with the episode. I'd like to thank you all for ardently supporting my podcast. It really gives me the strength and zeal to keep working and delivering quality content to you all. A heartfelt thank you. Do check out @NeverOnTheBackFoot on Instagram and @NeverOnTheBack1 on Twitter for the latest facts, trivia, quizzes, terminology and a lot more that's coming your way this cricket season. The podcast is also available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Anchor, Overcast and a lot of other platforms. So please do spread the word. Also, feel free to share your thoughts and suggestions for the already published episodes and recommendations for future topics. Do share this episode widely and your support is really appreciated. See you next time, listeners. Cheers, stay safe and take care. Bye for now.